It's Matt Bubalin for Patty Vasquez, Radio 720 WGN. I'm going to call him my good friend because I've interviewed him four times now. Principal Troy Laravier joins us in studio right now. That's okay. Take your time. I'll talk you up till you get everything set up. Principal Troy Laravier from Blaine Elementary School on the north side, fifth year as principal, and much longer than that, wreaking havoc in the Chicago public school system because if you haven't heard Principal Laravier on with us before, he speaks his mind. And when it might be better for him politically or professionally to toe the party line and go along with things, he tends not to do that. I give you credit for that because I know it hasn't been easy on you in your professional life because you've told me that there have been times that your bosses are calling you out of meetings going, dude, what are you doing to us? I know you have concerns, but let's figure out how to express them without doing this. And because you've been frustrated, I think, by a lack of progress and a lack of anything getting done, it seems to me that you've spoken up when you felt you've needed to instead of maybe the way bosses would want you to, which probably wouldn't get things done down the road. Is that an accurate assessment? Am I doing okay?
I think you're doing fine. the thing I'm most frustrated with is, well, there are two. One is a lack of competent, evidence-based education policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an educator, that is frustrating. You know, it's like working in a hospital and having lawyers determine medical procedures. You know, as a doctor, what the proper medical procedures are, what the proper protocols are. And you're having a bunch of lawyers tell you to do it another way.
So you're a surgeon and you know this is what I need to do to save lives. And Right. They're saying, that's fine, but here's how you're going to do it because this is better for the system as a whole and for our accountants and everything else like that.
Right. And so as an educator, you know, we experience the same thing as principals, as teachers. We know what good teaching, what good learning looks like, what kind of educational environment you need to create to maximize the teaching and learning that happens in your building, and everything that comes down, or most of the stuff that comes down from CPS is not necessarily in line with that. And so that's one frustration. The other frustration is just as a resident and a taxpayer, the incompetent fiscal management of our district. You know, those resources are supposed to go toward resources for teaching and learning, and they are mismanaged daily by this administration and wasted. And so we see millions, if not billions, of dollars that are supposed to go toward, you know, teaching and learning, and they're being wasted. Wasted on incompetent custodial management companies, wasted on incompetent principal training programs, wasted on high interest rates toward bankers that are connected with this administration.
And I was going to say, and some of that wasting isn't just, they chose the wrong plan, we shouldn't have done that, or boy, there was a better one, I wish they would have asked somebody else. It's more, that was connected to somebody, that helped out somebody down the road, and it's more kind of a friends helping friends thing that's getting you bad service because people are thinking more about lining some pockets than getting the proper training, things like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. There was a front page story on in the Tribune during election season, the mayoral election season. And it was a long investigation by the Trib where they went through the mayor's appointments. They went through city contracts and they went through his campaign donors to see the connections. And 60 of his highest campaign contributors all got contracts with the city, all got some kind of benefit from the city. You know, there's the Barbara Bird Bennett story where she steered $23 million of public school money towards her former bosses. In exchange for $2.3 million in kickbacks. You know, in the midst of this Laquan McDonald scandal and their calls for the mayor's email in relationship to McDonald, we have forgotten that he still has not released the emails in relationship to his involvement in the Barbara Bird Bennett soup scandal and that $23 million of public school money that was thrown down the toilet. So seeing one event after another, one corrupt event after another with this administration, seeing them waste our tax dollars that are supposed to go toward teaching and learning has been quite frustrating.
Barbara Burr Bennett one was pretty amazing to read the emails that were released because it was blatant. It was, you know, promises of a job afterward. I got to put kids through school. It was not just, boy, that looks like that was something underhanded. It was just blatant and out there, wasn't it?
Right. Those were her emails. We still haven't seen the mayor's emails, though. Yes, her email said something like, I have tuition to pay.
Yeah.
The quote was, I have tuition to pay and casinos to visit.
And it's amazing that you get to be Barbara Bird Bennett and have that high of a job and don't think there's things I shouldn't write in emails. That's the amazing thing, is how dumb our criminals can be. And when people do are just flaunting the law and breaking the law and stealing money in a way, which is what she was doing, right?
Right.
That you would joke like that, like I have tuitions to pay and casinos to visit, and put it in an – you say that to somebody over drinks when you're doing this, right?
Right.
You don't write that in an email.
Right. Not only, you know – did she say that, but she said it in the context in which she said it in. You know, she said it as the person who was presiding over a district where they had just cut tens of million dollars from school budgets. You know, I remember we got $700,000 cut from our, we only have a $5 million budget. We got $700,000 of that cut from our budget that year. She cut budgets all across the city with this, you know, this talk of we have to tighten our fiscal belt and times are hard. And all the time where she's snatching that those dollars away from students, she is steering 23 million of them toward a kickback scheme.
And the sad thing is, everything she was saying is probably true, right? Times are hard. We do need to tighten our belts. But then instead of tightening the belt and trying to make things better, trying to figure out ways we can keep schools open and keep teachers employed and not just start shuttling kids around to schools because we're closing down lower performing or underused schools. Instead of doing that and making things better for our kids, they're making these cuts and then lining somebody else's pocket, which that ended up being a bad training program, right, that we talked about with
it was absolutely horrible. And we have to remember, Barbara Bird Bennett was hand-selected by Rahm Emanuel to lead this district, hand-selected. You know, he announced her appointment. He stood by her at that press conference and talked her up. And this is what she did. But in terms of the last question, in terms of tightening belts, you know, I don't buy that.
No.
You know, this district is in the condition it is in because it went on a spending spree. You know, I had the good fortune of being on a panel at the City Club in August 25th, actually, on my birthday. And a couple of days before we did the panel, all of the presenters met at a downtown high-rise, and one of them was Paul Vallis.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paul had heard of me, and I was, you know, kind of complimented by that. Sure. He had heard of me, he told me he'd read my stuff. And so we talked for a long time. And he went over what he was going to be saying at the City Club in terms of the topic was CPS bankruptcy. And he outlined the fiscal practices that he had when he was the CPS CEO. When he left CPS, you know, I have no love for Paul Vallis's education policies,
mm-hmm.
but he left the district in good fiscal condition mm-hmm. in terms of its finances. You know, when he left the district, had a balanced budget 5 years out. It had a fully funded pension system and $1.2 billion in cash reserves. And he laid out the simple financial practices that ensured that. He said, we don't have new programs without identifying new revenue to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure. He said, we don't borrow to pay for operational expenses. And he said, we don't build new schools when we have declining enrollment. We don't spend millions of dollars building new schools when the population in the district is going down. You build new schools based on demographics, not based on education policy ideologies. And so that's what this district did. It went on a spending spree, not only with the new schools, but with stuff like, you know, soups. The district spent $10 million for office furniture for their new offices as they were cutting school budgets. And so it wasn't a time for belt tightening. It was a time for good, competent, disciplined fiscal management of our district. And that's not what we had, and it's not what we have.
And so was it just a shift when Rahm took office from Mayor Daley, just a changeover, and now we're going to spend and do these things? He put the wrong people in charge. I mean, what exactly happened?
So the shift happened actually under Daley, because Vallis was under Daley.
Right.
And then Daley replaced him. And I can't remember this. So we've had so many CEOs at CPS. You know, there was Huberman, there was Arne Duncan, and then right. Huberman and all the people after them. But it seems like there was, in identifying the CEOs after that, there seemed to be this connection with Wall Street financiers, vulture capitalists, that the people who were running our district had this intricate, intimate relationship with financiers from Wall Street and began to enter the district into these hazardous financial relationships, bad loans, you name it, that, you know, they were like parasites sucking the resources away from our children and toward their own bottom lines. And so it happened in the middle of Daley's term. And then when Rahm came in, you know, I used to wonder, you know, I was so naive. You know, I haven't been like I am this whole time. People people have only heard of me in the last, you know, year and a half. You know, I almost voted for Rahm. I remember it was between him and Gary Chico.
Yeah.
And I just sort of knew he was going to win, so I just gave Chico a vote.
Yeah.
but I could have voted for him easily. And I remember wondering during that first election why he got so much money. You know, I heard about the California connection, mm-hmm. that, you know, he was getting money from California, the banks, and it was all investing in him. Why are so many people interested in Rahm Emanuel becoming the mayor of Chicago? You know, and after 4 years under him, it became quite obvious. They weren't donating to him. They were investing in him. They were investing in getting him at the helm of the fiscal management of this city and our school district. I mean, we're talking several billion dollars here. And so if you have the person who's managing the purse strings at the helm, then they can then create these financial relationships that enrich you. And again, that's exactly what he did. And the top 60 donors all have some sort
benefited
of benefit.
In some way.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Principal Troy LaRavier. He is at Blaine Elementary School, and he is an outspoken critic of CPS and Mayor Rahm Emanuel. We've got to take a quick break and do the news. When we come back, Governor Rauner wants to take over CPS and have it declare bankruptcy. We'll see what Principal LaRavier has to say about that coming up next. It's pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Matt Bubala in tonight for Patty. Roger Badish up in the newsroom. We'll get to him in a minute. Principal Troy LaRavier will be with us here after the news as well. If you have a question about the Chicago Public Schools or a comment that you'd like to share, 312-981-7200. You can call or text in. And you can follow, as you have gotten to hear, Principal LaRavier is a outspoken person, and he will tell it like he sees it. So you can follow him on Twitter at Troy LaRavier, at Troy LaRavier, LaRavierE. Governor Rauner has proposed taking over the Chicago public school system and declaring bankruptcy.
Yes, he has. You know, when I first heard that, you know, I laughed. I literally laughed. I heard it like someone might listen to a report of UFOs flying over Lake Michigan.
Really?
Like, are they serious? The state taking over CPS? They can't even pass their own budget. You know, the state pension system is in worse shape than the Chicago pension system. I mean, it's as if someone decided to have a cocaine addict handle the affairs of an alcoholic. what is he doing? What is this, some sort of sideshow? I can't even take that seriously.
So you're wearing a Resign Rahm sweatshirt.
Yes, I am.
Hashtag Resign Rahm. And Governor Rauner, who hasn't passed a budget and is not a friend of the union, is trying to take over the CPS. So is this just like, you know, the devil that you know is better than the devil that you don't, or is it the blind leading the blind? What's the analogy here? I know you just gave us a good one, but I imagine you'd rather stick with Rahm for now than see the craziness that would happen if Rauner took over CPS.
I mean, I don't like either one of them, but I certainly don't want the state in control of CPS. Frankly, I think they're the same two-sided coin.
Yeah.
I think this is coordinated. I think they work. I frankly think they're doing this together. They have the same. Rahm made his first $17 million working with Rahm.
You think this little public spat that they're having right now is a little orchestrated?
Absolutely. I mean, again, I could be wrong. I'm not putting that across as
sure. It's just your personal, just your personal take on it. Let's get back to Principal Olarabi right after the news. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, Radio 720, WGN. Matt Bubala sitting in the big chair tonight with Principal Troy Laravier from Blaine Elementary School. There's so much always to cover with you. So let's talk a little bit about, can we talk about this election you might be involved in? I meant to ask you that off the air. I'm sorry to do that to you. We don't have to talk about that.
Why not?
Let's talk about the pensions, because I was just saying to you off the air, mm-hmm. I would think the concern for the teachers would be if the state takes over CPS, declares bankruptcy, figures out a way to try to break up or severely weaken the union. Right mm-hmm. now, a very strong teachers union in Chicago, I think.
Right.
So what would happen if Rauner was able to take over like he'd like? We know that he, you know, wants to, he would say, empower the cities more to, you know, have these fair works cities, things like that, which means weaken the unions.
Right.
I would imagine there would be that would be a goal here in Chicago.
Definitely. But he's not going to declare bankruptcy. That's not going to happen. That's a lot of talk to weaken the city's credit rating and to scare the union. You weaken the city's credit rating, then you have to pay even more to the banks and investors that he is allied with. Rahm pretends like he's angry. I don't believe it for a second. Rahm's whole purpose in taking control of the Chicago public schools and the city, his main purpose and their main purpose for backing him is to steer as much of our tax dollars or as many of our tax dollars toward Wall Street as possible. And so the higher the interest rates, the better. All of this is coordinated.
So you believe that when we find out who gave those loans, those high interest loans to CPS, we're going to find out that somewhere in that 60 donor list is going to be some people related to how these loans were executed?
Absolutely. But I see them as just, you know, it's almost ideological, mm-hmm. right? You know, whether they're in the list or not, they are of that cloth, and that is who he serves. And as far as the other end of the bankruptcy, why it's not going to happen is that you can't have a teacher or a pension-only bankruptcy. So if he spent for almost 5 years now working to indebt Chicago taxpayers to Wall Street, I mean, he spent
Rahm
a
can't
lot,
afford a bankruptcy. If things are like you're saying, that driving up interest rates, all these things are helping people he likes to help.
Exactly.
Then bankruptcy does not help those people.
Exactly. That is my point. And Rahner is allied with the same people. They come in and declare bankruptcy, then all of the work they've done to indebt us to the banks, to the vulturistic investors, is over. It is for nothing. You can't declare bankruptcy and renege on teacher pensions without also reneging on Wall Street. And there is no way they're going to set us up to renege on Wall Street. As a matter of fact, Wall Street has less protection than the teachers. The teachers' pension still is protected by the Constitution. Even everybody's pension is protected by the Constitution, even under a bankruptcy. The bankruptcy does not nullify the Constitution. But Wall Street does not have those kinds of protections. There is no way at all, ever, there will be a bankruptcy in Chicago or anywhere in Illinois with a municipality that is in this kind of debt with Wall Street, ever.
Not with the people in charge.
Not with these people. Now, if some progressive people got in charge, it might actually be a good strategy to renegotiate the deals we have with Wall Street. These vulturistic, toxic financial deals that we have. The threat of bankruptcy might bring them to the negotiation table to save Chicago taxpayers some money.
So they can't do anything about the current pensions because they're protected by the Constitution. But what they could do is try to say, okay, so if you're already in, you're in. But every new teacher coming on board, we're going to change the rules. Eventually, I would assume that's what's going to be done, or they're going to try to do, because they've mismanaged these funds so much over the years the only way I see these pensions keep going is because they need those new teachers to be putting in the money to pay everything that they haven't, the state hasn't done to support the pensions, you know, that they already have on the books and that they owe on.
That'll happen if we let it happen. That doesn't necessarily have to be the case. It certainly looks like it's headed toward that trajectory, but we can always change direction. It just depends on what the residents of Chicago want to put up with. You know, there are other resources out there. You know, this city has an incredibly vibrant economy, and we do not tap it anywhere as near as much as we should. For investment in our public infrastructure and our public institutions. You know, we have a huge service sector that is far larger than, you know, your regular sales sector in terms of buying goods. We don't generate revenue from services. When it's the biggest part of our sort of financial transaction, consumer transactions, we have a huge financial industry here. We do not generate revenue from that industry, and so there is a revenue side to this. And as you know, there has to be some shared sacrifice here. They talk about shared sacrifice a lot, you know, particularly when they talk about the teachers. You know, there has to be shared sacrifice. That's what they say. But Matt, who are they asking the teachers to share the sacrifice with? Nope.
They would say the taxpayers, I guess.
That's about it. They're not bringing in Wall Street. Mm-hmm. The Tribune had another front page story where there was $100 million in CPS lost to Wall Street because of these, not the toxic swaps. That was another loss, but there was the auction rate securities. You know, Bank of America and the Royal Bank of Canada were two that they mentioned where, you know, the way auction rate securities work is that, you know, you're basically taking out a loan, but people bid on the loan and they bid on an interest rate, you know, and based on some formula, they decide which interest rate, you know, they look at all the interest rates that are put out there. Well, I'll give you 8% on that, or I'll give you 4%. Mm-hmm. And they come up with one, and then you're locked into that interest rate. And so the banks sort of held, and if people weren't out there bidding, the banks would hold it up and they would bid on it to make sure that, you know, your bid didn't fall and you end up with the highest interest rate. The banks knew that this market was collapsing. Knew it. They have in their own internal documents where they show they knew it was going to collapse and they were concerned. And at the same time, they're sending CPS brochures and portfolios and documentation playing up these bonds as a safe way to borrow money. That is illegal. CPS can sue them for that and get their money back. But the mayor refuses to bring Wall Street to the table for shared sacrifice. Instead, he wants teachers to sacrifice for a deal that they had nothing to do with. He wants them to pay the price for Wall Street's corruption. He wants them to pay the price for his ineptitude. You know, that's not shared sacrifice. Teachers are willing to sacrifice if it's shared. Right now, it's not being shared with anyone. They're being asked to bear the brunt by themselves.
What do you see as the future of the pension system? Most of the public sector does not have a pension system anymore. When I first started here at the Tribune Company back in 1997, if I would have worked here long enough, I would have gotten a pension for life, right? That's gone now. Tribune Company, as it was then, is gone now. Most companies, you don't go to IBM, work for 30 years, earn a pension for the rest of your life anymore. But in the public sector, as a teacher, you still can. Now, I will defend that in that my wife is a teacher, and she didn't pay into Social Security all these years because she was paying into the teacher's pension system.
Right.
So it's not like teachers are just getting this free ride. They are hopefully going to get back more than they put in because hopefully you live long enough and that pension is yours for life. But you have to put in a certain amount of years and you sacrifice Social Security to get into it.
Right.
But it's rare anymore. And with the length of time we're living, and the way that it's set up, or in some cases was set up where you're earning an average of your last 5 years' salary. And we heard lots of stories over the years about people jacking up their salaries for the last couple of years to help them out with their pensions. So a lot of that stuff has to get fixed. And I just wonder if long term, especially just looking at how long we're living, the cost of that ends up being, if we're not putting the right amount of money in, very difficult to bear and somewhat unpredictable too. Do you think long term these pensions will live on?
And again, it depends on us. I think if.
Do you think they should, or do you think they should move to more of a, you know, get your Social Security, put in a certain amount, the union should put in a certain amount, the school district, everything should put in a certain amount, and more of a 401k manage on your own system?
I think it should be fair. I think we need to back up and look at what we want in our country. Do we want people to work their entire lives and be able to retire with some dignity and not have to make ends meet and pay for their medication by working as Walmart greeters, right? Should someone work as a police officer, a firefighter, a teacher, their entire lives and not be able to retire in dignity? And based on our answer to that question, decide which system, based on the evidence, you know, and I'm not a financial expert, you know, but I know 401ks took a huge hit in this last market collapse.
Yeah.
You know, in a manner that many pensions did not. And so regular people like us took this huge hit, you know, but that money went somewhere. You know, we're taking a hit, and Wall Street and vulture capitalists and investors are raking in, you know, a windfall. That must change. You know, the money is there. It is now being concentrated in fewer and fewer and fewer hands. And that is by design. And we have to decide what kind of system we want and redesign it. So I don't necessarily have a preference on pension or this or that. I think evidence should determine. I think we should determine what we want retirees' lives to look like, and then use the evidence to determine which system will get us to that goal. And so I'm not expert and very familiar with all the evidence on, you know, financial transactions and pensions versus 401ks, but I know the evidence is out there. And policymakers need to look at it and to determine which one will help us to reach our goal.
I've got to ask you, because the way you were just talking now about finances and things made me think of Bernie Sanders.
Right.
So I've got to ask you nationally. I don't think you're voting for Trump. That's my guess. Not 100% sure on that, but that's just a wild guess.
I would vote for him in the Republican.
You would?
Just so that we can make it easier for Bernie to win in the general. Because nobody's electing Trump.
You know, it's funny. I've told my wife, we were talking about this the other night, and I was like, you know, Trump's one shot to win is if he goes up against Bernie Sanders, in my mind. Bernie's one shot to win is if he goes up against Trump. Because I think Bernie is so far left that a lot of the mainstream liberals might not vote for him or might get a possibility to be swayed another way. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, Trump is so out there that here's Bernie's one shot to get some of those Republicans that would never vote for him in a million years. Because I do think that the one thing about Trump is that, you know, the economy and the markets love stability. And as much as he's Mr. Finance and I'm going to build and all these things, he's a loose cannon. And yes. I would assume that the unsure nature of our relationship to all the other countries once he took office, I think that would scare the hell out of the markets.
That's an interesting perspective. I never thought about it that way. But I agree.
So are you supporting somebody vocally? So is Bernie your guy?
I am an official delegate to the convention for Bernie Sanders.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
So will you be working the Illinois, getting out the word
for
Bernie here in Illinois?
We have 42 days left. I will certainly be doing everything I can to make sure as many Illinoisans and Chicagoans in particular vote for Bernie Sanders.
All right. Yeah. Give me the 2-minute elevator pitch on why, if you're a Democrat, you should be voting for Bernie instead of Hillary.
Well, Bernie has been shown in polls to match up better with every Republican candidate. He beats each one of them by a larger margin than Hillary does in every poll that's out there so far. And, you know, we haven't even gotten to a point where everybody is as familiar with him. It's like every day that goes by, his poll numbers get better and better and better. And then there's just his policies. You know, he just seems to have, not seems to, he has demonstrated throughout his entire career, a fierce determination to fight for the common man. I mean, you can see him in Senate debates and then House and debates on the House floor from 30 years ago or 20 years ago, where he is saying the exact same thing that he says today. The man is consistent in terms of universal health care, in terms of college affordability. The message is consistent across his entire political career. I don't think you can say the same thing when you look at any other candidate, you know, including Hillary. So I don't know if that's 2 minutes, but
no, that's good. That's good. It's interesting. It'll be very interesting to see. You really almost stole one there in Iowa. It got really close there at the end when Hillary took the stage. And then I was telling my son, yeah, it's over. My 14-year-old son, who's a freshman in high school.
Right.
And he's just loving and he's wishing so bad he was in a political science class right now because he's so fascinated by the process. And so we're sitting talking about it. I'm like, ah, so it was like, you know, 10:30 at night. He's got to get up at 6. I'm like, you got to go to bed. He's like, Bernie's coming back. I'm like, yeah, Bernie's done. He's done. It's over. It's 8 delegates now. Get up to bed. And then we're watching. My wife and I are watching, and it goes back down. It got up to 8 delegates. Then it's 6. Then it's 4. Then it's down to 3. I'm like, Jack, you better come back downstairs. I don't know what's going to happen here. This is crazy. And so that was a great showing in Iowa. I mean, I know you didn't win Iowa, but you have to be happy with that start, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, Hillary's all but conceded New Hampshire. You know, and she insulted the people of New Hampshire in conceding. She said, well, you know, New Hampshire's you know, a neighbor of Vermont, and they're just doing the neighborly thing. Like, really, as if the governor of Indiana was running, the people of Chicago would just go for him because he's our neighbor. Like, we don't have the intellectual capacity to see beyond the fact that he's the governor of the next state. I mean, that's an insult. But I think he's gonna win. I think by the time we get to Illinois, I think Bernie will be in the lead.
Really?
I do.
Wow, that's going to be interesting. And Trump will be in the lead, it looks like, when we get to Illinois. I mean, if these polls hold up, although he might just shoot himself in the foot right out of this thing. I didn't see the Cruz stole the election, they should redo it or nullify it coming. I didn't know how he'd handle losing, but I didn't see that one coming. Thinking, well, there's a lot of states you're going to have to say that about here if you don't turn this around. But he's got such a big lead in these upcoming states. So unless that really starts, I thought it was brilliant that he skipped the last debate. But the whole thing afterwards about, you know, he stole the election. I was like, oh, my goodness, this is what you're going to do now every time you lose one.
And the more we narrow the field down, the more his insanity is going to come into focus. There's no way he is going to be elected president of the United States.
Well, you know, I think what's interesting is this is the first time it really hurt him not to have a good ground game. That I'm doing this on my own. I'm speaking on my own. I'm not taking a bunch of advice from people that really worked for him up until you really need people at all these caucuses. You really need to hit the ground. You need all these things you have to do to win Iowa. I don't think he was prepared for any of that. I think that really cost him there, you know. Yeah,
that is the conventional wisdom, and it makes sense.
All right, so we'll talk again about Bernie. When is Illinois? April what?
I don't remember the exact date.
Come on, you're working. You're a delegate. Like, how do you, like, not know this?
It's like 42 days. What is 42 days from now?
I don't know.
I've been counting it down, and for some reason it just slipped
March.
My head.
That would be in March. All right, March sometime. We'll chat with you again before then. Principal Troy Laravier from Blaine Elementary School. Follow him on Twitter. It's a good read at Troy Laravier, Laravierre. Thanks, as always, for coming in. We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
720 WGN.